Today is a great day, a great day of reverence, a day like no other. It is Star Wars Day. For those of you who may not know Star Wars, it is an epic space franchise centered on a film series created by George Lucas. Among the band of characters are Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker. Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father, who has embraced evil and wants his son to do the same. Star Wars bridges science with fantasy by posing the idea of the Force, an energy that permeates all of life. The Force can be utilized to do good, or it can be utilized for destruction. Like we saw in the video, some people within the Star Wars universe are able to use the Force to manipulate and move inanimate objects. The people in the movie can utilize the Force are called Jedi. As a young child, I remember the first two toys that I can remember playing with were the Star Wars figurines, Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker. I would play for hours in the grip of this tumultuous battle between good and evil. I was fascinated by the way Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker could use their mind to move things, and the way in which Skywalker resisted his evil tendencies. 30 years later, I still love Star Wars. Recently, when going to pick up my 11-year-old son, Parker, from a party, I went to his friend's room to find him and his friends playing with Star Wars spaceships. It was like deja vu. After its release 37 years ago, Star Wars still fascinates people. In 2001, the Australian Bureau of Statistics issued an official press release announcing a strange but true finding in the census. It turns out that more than 70,000 people had declared their religion as Jediism. That same year in New Zealand, more people identified themselves as being Jedi or belonging to the Jedi faith more than the Buddhist and the Hindus. Today, Jediism is the seventh most popular religion in the United Kingdom. What started as an epic movie adventure has become much more in the lives of many people. When fans speak of Star Wars, they almost always begin the discussion by alluding to the Force or making hand gestures as though they are utilizing the Force or choking someone. What might it feel like to be in touch with the Force? Some mystics speak of feeling completely connected with all of life. Some spiritual paths speak of the flow of life. In Star Wars, an old Jedi master named Yoda speaks with like a great sage. In this clip, Yoda is trying to teach a young Luke Skywalker to use the Force to lift his spaceship out of the water. Skywalker is not doing well with the lesson.
Impossible. why you fail.
Unfortunately, I have to admit that even after years of practicing, like Skywalker, I was unable to move items with my mind. But how might this work in our lives? Imagine going grocery shopping. You're in line and you have five people with a few items and two people in line with many items. I'm not sure if I'm the only person that's ever tried to control this situation and try to use the force to figure out which one would work, but I have. It seems that I have some sort of anti-force because I always choose the wrong line. But for all of its nerdiness, there seems to be something deeper about the notion of the force that appeals to people. Joseph Campbell, in an interview with Bill Moyers, gives his perspective on Star Wars by saying, "It's not simple morality at play. It has to do with the powers of life and their inflection through the action of man." The force may be called many different things: Tao, spirit, intention, energy. But for practical purposes, perhaps the force is that thing that connects us with the power of life, aligns our lives, our individual lives, and our collective lives with purpose. It's what inspires us. What inspires us as Unitarian Universalists, both as individuals and as a community? The answer is as varied as there are people here today. But if we look briefly at Unitarian Universalism, we find a unique religious tradition that combines both a love for humanity, justice, the democratic process, and the natural world. This love is demonstrated through the practice of acceptance and encouragement of one another, people taking responsibility for their own search for truth and meaning, and the ways in which we help our communities and people around the world. This framework of understanding is what brought many of us to Unitarian Universalism and what has sustained many of the people who were raised as Unitarian Universalists. These ideals and practices form a sort of force that binds us together and keeps us coming back. When we look at the work that Unitarian Universalists do in our community, we realize that we cannot move ships with just our minds. But we do utilize our minds and our bodies to get things done. To me, that is a very powerful force. I remember coming to my first Unitarian Universalist church service in Knoxville, Tennessee, many years ago. The congregation was talking about building a new church. They had compiled a list of words and phrases that were submitted by members to go on stone plaques in the sanctuary. They included such things as love, wonder, truth, knowledge, and may the force be with you. I knew I was in the right place. They were also including symbols from different religious traditions in the sanctuary. This was more than I could have ever dreamed of. It was a place to belong, to feel comfortable exploring my path, and to be supported in asking the big questions. This inspired great emotion in me because I didn't have to create some utopia in my mind. It already existed. The excitement that was present in the people at the church inspired me. Their energy and enthusiasm was a force in my life that has kept me active in Unitarian Universalism. As a director of religious education, I'm aware that the children in our program will not always be children. They will one day be adults. One question I have asked myself is, what connects these small children to the adults in our congregation? With this question, I am reminded of a story. A child is walking across the courtyard after church, and a scientist from the congregation stops the child to talk about the importance of quantum physics. As quantum physics is complex and important, it takes some time to explain. As the conversation ends, the child takes a few more steps, and a local activist stops the child and begins talking about the importance of a social justice issue. Since the cause is of great importance and affects lots of people, it takes some time to explain. Finally, as this conversation comes to a close, a professor of theology stops the child to talk about the influence of modern sociology on biblical thought. And as we all know, modern sociology and biblical thought take some time to talk about. The child finally comes to his friend at the playground who says, "What took you so long?" And the child looks at his friend and says, "I'm not sure, but if you want a cookie, you have to get it yourself." True story. Finding common ground in our faith, the force that connects us all, is not always a question just for the adults in the congregation, but also relates to the commonality that we all share, from the smallest of children to the most seasoned of members. Just as the foundation of Unitarian Universalism can be understood through our seven principles, we find that our faith is a living tradition. One of the sources of Unitarian is the direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life. One thing that connects Unitarian Universalists from the very young to the very young at heart is a sense of mystery and wonder. This is a very powerful force that can move many of us to tears, laughter, and deeper meditation about life. For me, Star Wars bends the borders between reality as I know it and gives me a sense of hope of things to come. It gives me a sense of wonder and mystery, a sense of awe. But what is awe and wonder? Here's a brief explanation.
So I think a lot about the contrast between banality and wonder, between disengagement and radiant ecstasy, between being unaffected by the here and now and being absolutely ravished emotionally by it. And I think one of the problems for human beings is mental habits. Once we create a comfort zone, we rarely step outside of that comfort zone. But the consequence of that is a phenomenon known as hedonic adaptation. Overstimulation to the same kind of thing, the same stimuli again and again and again, renders said stimuli invisible. Your brain has already mapped it in its own head, and you no longer literally have to be engaged by that. We have eyes yet see not, ears that hear not, and hearts that neither feel nor understand. There's a great book called The Wondering Brain that says that one of the ways that we elicit wonder is by scrambling the self temporarily so that the world can seep in. You know, Henry Miller says even a blade of grass, when given proper attention, becomes an infinitely magnificent world in itself, you know. Darwin said attention, if sudden and close, graduates into surprise, and this into astonishment, and this into stupefied amazement. That's what rapture is. That's what illumination is. That's what that sort of infinite comprehending awe that human beings love so much. And so how do we do that? How do we mess with our perceptual apparatus in order to have the kind of emotional and aesthetic experience from life that we render most meaningful? Because we all know those moments are there. Those are the moments that would make final cut. Only in these moments we experience afresh the hardly bearable ecstasy of direct energy exploding on our nerve endings. This is the rhapsodic, ecstatic bursting forth of awe that expands our perceptual parameters beyond all previous limits, and we literally have to reconfigure our mental models of the world in order to assimilate the beauty of that download. That is what it means to be inspired. The Greek root of the term means to breathe in, to take it in. We fit the universe through our brains, and it comes out in the form of nothing less than poetry. We have a responsibility to awe.
Carl Sagan writes in his book, Contact, "Look, we all have a thirst for wonder. It's a deeply human quality. Science and religion are both bound up with it. What I'm saying is you don't have to make stories up. You don't have to exaggerate. There's wonder and awe in the real world. Nature's a lot better at inventing wonders than we are." Many of us find the force or inspiration through nature. When I lived in Tennessee, I went backpacking quite often. I felt connected with myself and the world as I climbed a mountain, touched the trees, and lay near the earth. At night, the forest seemed to be alive. I felt like it was pulsating with life. Kant writes in Critique of Practical Reason, "Two things fill the mind with ever new and increasing admiration and awe, the oftener and more steadily we reflect on them. The starry heavens above me and the moral law within me." When we think about our community here, we can see the many things that inspire awe and wonder in people. Science, social justice, theology, philosophy, meditation, singing, gardening, art, ecology, language, culture, and so much more. I know for myself that I can sometimes forget and feel disconnected from the things that brought me such joy. But when I take time to reconnect, to feel that force of which Joseph Campbell talked about, I feel better equipped to deal with the demands of life. Sometimes it feels as though life is a set of books defined by the bookends. There is lots of sense and wonder at the beginning and at the end, with a little bit of knowledge thrown in between. As a parent, I often feel this way. The demands of daily life do not often inspire me to feel in touch with that connecting force. And inspiration does not often find me because I'm already fast asleep before it arrives. There are times when I have pondered why people love watching children so much. I now think it may be because adults recognize the sense of awe and wonder in children, the same sense and wonder that they share in themselves. Many people identify with that pure life force that children have. When looking through pictures of my daughter while writing this sermon, I saw her in a new way. Priya loves coming to church because we have the best stink bugs here. She is so fascinated by them. Here she is sharing during a religious education class the things that she did to help her family throughout the week. The sense of awe and wonder is so apparent in children. Almost everything is new and wondrous. Making crafts using simple yarn and construction paper is priceless. Being with friends and learning is the most wonderful experience. She is so intent. And as they share a community, just like our children, you share a community. But we must remember that the sense of awe and wonder never has to end. My daughter is definitely a force of nature and often wears me out. But when I take the time to stop and to realign my own self through seeing the beauty that she represents, I feel a deeper connection as a whole. That sense of awe and wonder is a force that I can utilize to bring me back to center. So stop for a moment to think about what inspires you. What has created a sense of awe and wonder in your life? What force has made a difference in your own life? Many people with whom I have spoken have found a connection with coming to service every Sunday. Parents and their children talk about the satisfaction they get from having a supportive community. I think part of regaining that sense of awe and wonder, of connecting to the force, is simply by taking time to ask ourselves this question and reflect upon it. It reconnects us to who we are as humans, what gives us life. For me, by taking time to reflect on what has given me a sense of awe and wonder, I now see there are many things. A few of these are Star Wars, Unitarian Universalism, and being involved with the children and families in religious education. So as you go into the world today, remember what inspires you. Remember to look at the world in new eyes. And as you leave today, may the 4th be with you.